Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
You, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter, who spent some days on vacation down in San Diego and now is back in Sacramento, lighting the beam, as always, for his Sacramento Kings. I'm with baseball coming up, too, around the corner. He's going to be a busy man. We're pretty excited today to talk about the Cardinals' chirpings. Chirp, chirp, chirp. At the Combine, there's lots to talk about. I want to start with Kyler Murray. An interesting array of of back and forth occurred over the last few days when on social media it was reported that one NFL pundit mocked Bo Nix to the Cardinals at pick number 27. First of all, I don't envision Nix sliding to 27 in this draft. That would be surprising to me. But second of all, I mean, this created a firestorm. Kyler fans were insulted, threatened, whatever you want to call it, calling out BS, you know, this and that. When I clearly took it as a backup plan for Kyler, I didn't think this was something that should have threatened Kyler necessarily, but to have a good quarterback in place. And what I argued was that, hey, you know, Israel Wolfert, the Cardinals offensive quarterbacks coach, coached Bo Nix at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, and part of the reasoning was that on one of the texts was the Cardinals have done extensive research on Bo Nix and other quarterbacks, which, you know, Jim Nagy got on there and clarified what extensive work means. I just think, you know, if you coach a guy a whole week in practice at the Senior Bowl and during the game, that's pretty extensive, you know, inside, you know, scouting that you can do with a guy. So it was just very intriguing. And what was pretty fascinating was that within minutes of this firestorm happening on Twitter, the Cardinals posted a Kyler's our franchise quarterback tweet. The timing of it suggested this was in concert with trying to, you know, calm people down on social media, Cardinal fans on social media, who were upset by this and perplexed by it. One of our writers, really good writers at ROTB, John Buckley, just invite you to go to the site and read his piece today on whether the Cardinals should invest in a quarterback at some point in this draft to compete as a QB2. When asked about this yesterday at the Combine, Monty Ossenfort sang the praises of Clayton Tune, said he's been in the building working hard, and that he thought that Clayton Tune showed growth last year, leading the scout team, and, you know, in the kind of gadget role that they gave him. And I think Monty and others like myself would agree that throwing him to the Wolves, the dog pound, for that one game was not a fair assessment of Clayton Tune, his ability moving forward. So it was encouraging to hear Monty talk highly of Clayton Tune, but he also said, you know, sometimes maybe you need a veteran in there, and sometimes, or maybe we just add another player, younger player, but we like Clayton Tune. And of course, Monty had said previously how excited he was with the progress Kyler made in the offense last year, and how they're really excited that Kyler's in the building every day, and this will be the first time in since his rookie year that he'll have a whole OTAs on the field, which seems bizarre, but two COVID years were in there, and a holdout year and a ACL year. So, so that's been in the news. Dan Bickley, who I really like, on one of his blasts today, you know, or yesterday, really questioned the timing of the Cardinals tweet about Kyler's as franchise quarterback. And then the Cardinals doubled down yesterday with posting a tweet with a portrait of Kyler saying the one and only. So, you know, make of that as you will. You know, it's just the Kyler drama is not going to go away. And, you know, people were wondering about these tweets too, is that, you know, maybe there was some hidden motive in these things. You know, it's like when I grew up in the 60s, we couldn't wait to get the Beatles album so we could play them backwards to hear like, Paul is dead. You know, these like cryptic messages. You know, it's like everything's like a cryptic message that this is just so Cardinals with Bidwell and his, you know, running an organization like he's a covert CIA spy. It's just unbelievable. And of course, and Bickley was right, the timing of these tweets right before the start of the combine, you know, for everyone to see, you know, setting the stage there. For, you know, why are the Cardinals doing this? Isn't it obvious? What's the timing of this? Could there be something up with this? You know, so whatever the case may be, that's where we started with Kyler this week and with the Cardinals and how they're reacting to it. Now, getting back to Kyler, and as one who, you know, was very, very impressed that Kyler came back this year and played as hard as he did and you know, and added aspects to his game that he hadn't been asked to do before. And I thought really played, you know, some really good football, particularly in that Philadelphia Eagles game. He was terrific in that game. Absolutely fantastic. And, but, you know, and I'm getting a lot of shit for this on social media. I mean, he had the lowest QBR grade of his career. And yes, he was coming back from ACL. And yes, he was playing in a new system. But it's pretty hard for you guys to shit on Cliff and then turn around and make excuses for this, in my opinion. You know, and I've been wondering, I've been asking the question all along, you know, I mean, the last 2 years with Kyler's struggles, you know, it'd be amazing if he could get back to playing the kind of football he did in 2021 under Cliff, where he had his highest QBR grade of 63.2. But the problem was with Kyler coming back was the inconsistencies. And to be honest, I mean, his only game with a QBR over 60 was the Eagles game. It was 85, spectacular. And he played well in other games at key points. But the consistency is what's going to make the difference for Kyler moving forward. Is can he become a consistent passer and from the pocket? And Kurt Warner was asked on Bickley and Murata to give his opinion of where Kyler is right now.
Yeah, he hasn't answered all the questions for me. For me, with Kyler, it's simply a matter of consistency. I want to see him play at that high level week in, week out through the course of a game. You know, and a lot of it for me, and whether it's bias or whatever because of how I played or, you know, people want to say this all the time, is that I still have to see these guys play inside the pocket consistently. That you can't live, no matter how talented. I mean, Kyler makes so many unbelievable plays moving around. But you can't live in that world. It doesn't matter how good you are. I think we've seen that with Lamar Jackson. As talented as anybody we've ever seen play the quarterback position, When it comes time to win games against good teams, you've got to do it consistently inside the pocket and make throw after throw after throw. And so that's what we're still waiting for. You know, Lamar's done at a great level in the regular season. When he gets to good teams week in and week out, he hasn't been as consistent. Kyler, we've seen moments in the regular season. I mean, he's been in the MVP conversation numerous times because he's such a tremendous playmaker. And I've always said this, one of the most gifted throwers that we have in our league, the ability to throw the football. But he hasn't been consistent in terms of seeing and playing within the pocket. And that's what, to me, causes the great inconsistencies from game to game or throughout a season for Kyler. And if you want to be, in my opinion, again, a franchise quarterback, a guy that can carry a team and can win against the best teams in the league consistently, you've got to be able to do that consistently.
Right. You know, I know where Kurt's coming from because of the way he played, all about consistency and hanging in there in the pocket and delivering the ball where the receivers wanted it. And you know, this offseason, Kyler will have the chance to work one-on-one with every one of his receivers the way Kurt Warner did, and syncing up where are you going to place the ball, at what time off their breaks are they going to catch it, or the ball's going to be thrown. Syncing all that up the way that Matthew Stafford in our own division does so amazingly with Cooper Kupp, and this offseason, obviously, with Puka Nacua. You know, this is the kind of chemistry building that OTAs can give you. It's a platform, and it's an opportunity. And that's why no skipping OTAs is, you know, everyone said it's no big deal. It's a big deal. It's a huge deal, especially when you're talking about inconsistencies and in trying to take an offense to the next level. And this is why I've been arguing all along. I mean, Kliff never had that chance. I mean, in 2022, his whole offense wasn't there on OTAs. They skipped it, starting with Kyler. I mean, and everyone's saying, well, he wasn't innovative in 2000. How are you innovative if everyone's missing OTAs? And someone would say, well, Kliff encouraged it. That's bullshit. All right. He didn't encourage it. What he couldn't do is defy the NFL rules that he had to say it's mandate. It's optional. You know, it's voluntary, which is the way the NFL demands it being talked about. This is not a mandatory thing. But the other thing that year was what was compounded by it was that Kyler was ill and hurt through all of training camp. And so is Colt McCoy, I mean, which compounded matters. So the first time, and then you had the Hopkins, am I retiring, am I not, that drama. Then you had, Hudson, am I retiring, am I not, that drama. The Hopkins drama with 6-game suspension. He skipped OTAs. Hollywood Brown skipped OTAs. You know, he's going to do whatever Kyler does, which bothers me. But, you know, all of that, I mean, the first time they could gather the entire offense together was 4 days before was the week before the Chiefs game. I mean, come on. I mean, no wonder they ran a lot of the old plays, and no wonder why Kyler's audibles were the same. And, you know, we saw a lot of the old plays that drove people crazy. But a lot of them were checkoffs by Kyler. So anyway, he's in a new system now. It's a different system in the sense that, you know, and point out that with Kyler running the team, the offensive line played better. The running game was even better than before. It was good all year, but it took... They ramped it up a notch with Kyler in the game. Of course, Kyler helped out with his legs from on numerous occasions. So, and then they ended up, you know, in the top 10 in total yards at ninth with Kyler coming back. So that's a huge positive. Now, imagine what could have happened if Kyler's QBR were different, you know, and his consistency was in passing was different. Now, you got to give him a bit of some slack of, you know, coming back that late and then, you know, trying to work out chemistry with receivers. It was so encouraging to see him work out some chemistry with Michael Wilson finally at the end and with Greg Dortch at the end. And then, of course, with McBride from the pretty much the beginning. That was a wonderful story. So that's why I have like visions of Brock Bowers and McBride being just dynamite over the middle for the Cardinals, one on each side. I think it would be impossible to defend. But you know, with Kyler, this is a huge offseason. He's approaching us the right way. He's in the building. He's focused now. Can he get down these nuances of the offense? And like Kurt Warner says, can he win consistently from the pocket? And I've talked about that last year, which Bickley and Murata picked up on and piggybacked on was, you know, two things that's really going to help Kyler is he's got to learn to float in that pocket and buy time the way the great ones do. And, you know, a guy who does it really well in our own division is Brock Purdy, and he's not a tall quarterback. And Kurt Warner would do it amazingly, and Tom Brady was the absolute master. Even at Brady's size, he had to shift his feet away from pressure, but then to create clear passing lanes and vision, field vision. Even at 6'4", vision is an issue when you're, you know, offensive linemen are 6'5", with helmets on, you know, and cleats, which is essentially like 6'6". You know, so here's the thing is that, you know, with all of that coming up, and it appears the Cardinals are poised to use their first two picks on offense, which behooves them to do their great, you know, due diligence in free agency on defense, obviously. And, you know, but it appears that the plan going in is a receiver with the first pick and a tackle with the second pick. So with that, I mean, Monty was asked a lot of questions yesterday. And our good friend Kyle Odegaard from bettingodds.com posted this article yesterday, a decoding article. I thought it was awesome. I'm going to share it with you and then share my own thoughts with each question. But so first question was Austin Fort's thoughts on Zaven Collins' fifth-year option. Austin Fort said, "I thought Zaven made a lot of great strides throughout the season. With him, as with all our players, we expect to see a jump from year one to year two. His comfort level, just getting more used to the position in terms of the fifth-year option, and we've got some time with that. We're going to continue to figure out as we go." Now, here's the decoder from KO. "We don't really need more time. Collins is an athletic player who has yet to find an NFL home at off-the-ball linebacker or edge. Like Isaiah Simmons before him, there's no chance we are picking up the fifth-year option on Zaven." Kyle, if you get this article... If you want to get on Kyle Odegaard, you can play him. I'll play Austin Fort.
All right.
Just decoding the coach speak. Monty Austin Fort and Jonathan Gannon at the NFL Scouting Combine. So here's the next one. Oh, by the way, my reaction to that. You know my reaction to that. Move him back to Mike where he belongs. We can't play a converted safety at Mike. He's not going to hold up physically, and he's not good at Mike. He had a 58 PFF grade, and he was erratic as Kyler was at quarterback. If you look at his game grades, they're like Kyler's, some in the 20s. Kyler had a couple in the 20s, like that Bears game. Ugh. Like that the game at Texans, which could have given us a, you know, an earlier draft pick. from their pick, anyway.
Well, yeah, if the Texans miss the playoffs, they're guaranteed a pick in the top 20. And yeah. All the Texans needed was one loss. One loss right. was the only difference.
Right. So, you know, I just think the way the Cardinals have consistently just absolutely shit the bed on linebackers, this is right in line with all of that. It's disgusting to me. What's also disgusting to me is everyone turning back and blaming it on Steve Keim. It's just wrong. I mean, the Patriots, if Mac Jones wasn't there, they were going to take Zaven Collins. I mean, Zaven Collins won every defensive award in the country. I mean, but somehow when he gets to the Cardinals, he sucks. Well, because they screwed him around. You know, his first game, he played great against the Titans. He and J.J. Watt were playing physical on Derrick Henry. They were getting TFLs, tackles for loss. And then he gets yanked. You know, and then for games on end, yo-yoed. Just the way Vance Joseph did with Isaiah Simmons. Simmons, the first action he gets, he makes one mistake, he gets yanked and benched for three games. I mean, who does that? It's just awful. But the Cardinals do. And then putting the guys in the right positions for crying out loud. And so now, you know, all the fans say, well, it's another failed Steve Keim pick. They're just getting rid of him. No, this is a great athlete. And he has all the ingredients of being a slobber knocker at Mike linebacker. He's got the physicality. He's got the downhill mentality. And he's really good in coverage. That's one of the reasons why he won the Nagurski and the Butkus Awards at Tulsa. He got a pick six game winner in coverage at Tulsa. I mean, this kid can play. But, you know, moving him around. So I think Kyle Odegaard hit it right on the head there. It sounds harsh, but there's no chance we're picking up fifth-year option on Zaven. Sadly not. And maybe this is a Reddick type of year on the edge for Zaven. I wouldn't count him out of anything because of the kind of athlete and competitor he is. So let's hope they're keeping him on the edge that, you know, this is a breakout year for him at that position. But unlike Reddick, who's, a quick bend, super quick off the edge, Zaven wins with power. More so. He's a different kind of athlete. That's why he's so good in the middle. If they could only wake up and smell the coffee on that. So, all right. Gannon on the potential re-signing of Hollywood Brown. Quote, there's an economic piece to that that we'll sort out as we get going here. Gannon Decoder.
Well, we'll make him an offer. If it's topped, say goodbye to Hollywood. If not, welcome back.
Good one, KO. I think that's about right. I think they will make him an offer. And hopefully it's not double figures.
How about over under 1.5 years on the contract?
Well, I mean, I think it's got to be a 1 year. Prove it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because... And it shouldn't, in my opinion, exceed $10 million. And, it, you know, that's what I mean, double digits. That, you know, if it's, you know, but it should be loaded with incentives. So I would think like an $8 million deal with, you know, with you can get $3 million in incentives off, or a $9 million in three. And if he's willing to take that because he apparently wants to stay and do a 1 year deal where if he could stay healthy all year and have a big year. See, what worries me about situations like that is that the pressure that puts on Kyler to feed his buddy. And, you know, I'd love to see an offense where Kyler doesn't go into a game feeling the pressure to throw to anybody, that he's just throwing to the open guys at the right times. And it doesn't have to be tilted one way or the other. But there's pressure with that. You know, I mean, he has talked to Hollywood after the games. And, you know, and there was pressure constantly with Hopkins on that. Constantly. And it got, the pressure got too much after a while for Kyler. And they were butting heads. It's just a lot to ask. And I mean, going back to Kurt Warner, one of the best things he ever did was when Larry was chirping at him, said, "Larry, stop. I'm going to get it to the open man. When you're open, I'm getting it to you. But when Jeremy Urban's open, I'm getting it to him. When Stevie Breslin's open, I'm going to get it, to him. When Anquan Boldin's open, I'm going to get it to him. We're going to here to win. We're here to win and not just, you know, focus on individual stats." And that's the way it's done. That's what you have to do. We've got a lot of positions to address. And particularly if we're going to take a receiver first, it would be a luxury to have Brown back for a year. And it's got to be at a hometown discount, in my opinion. So, and then you're going to have to also the pressure of feeding the rookie. So let's say for some bizarre reason, and I don't think it's going to happen, but Marvin Harrison Jr. winds up at 4 and the Cardinals take him. He's going to be the new toy in the offense. You know, you're going to want to feed him as much as you can. Now, what's that going to mean to Hollywood on the other side? You know, so, I mean, you got to think of these dynamics and the chemistry and the pressures involved when you make these decisions. All right. On TJ Humphreys, Monty said, "It's a difficult situation. All I can say is Hump has been at the facility every day. He's grinding through rehab, and I know he will put himself in the best position to be ready to play." Austin Fort Decoder,
"We love you, DJ. And it's a cold business. The divorce is near."
Yeah, KO is pulling no punches here. I mean, ready to play, it's doubtful he'll be able to play next year at all, although, you know, in a year's time, maybe. I mean, he's got the ACL, so, you know, and he injured it in December, if I'm not mistaken, or it was maybe early January.
I think it was early January because it was the Eagles game.
Yeah, just sad the timing, and DJ had you know, hung in there. He actually made it longer than I had thought he would, especially coming off the back injury from the year before. But DJ, you know, he's an enigma to me. You know, I mean, you love the guy. You know, he's a great soundbite. You know, he's a lovable teammate. He's a gregarious soul. And at times, he's a dang good left tackle. But, you know, the injuries are one thing, and the consistency, again, is another thing. And the lack of discipline is another thing. To where, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, if he's ever going to change. Now, for example, I mean, DJ was the one who, you know, I mean, somehow from day one, Monty and Gannon felt like DJ was the, you know, bell cow alpha leader of the team and appointed him as such, which was surprising to me because, you know, I mean, first of all, DJ had been out half the year. Second of all, Josh Jones, when he went in front of DJ, outplayed him. So you got this younger guy who had, you know, down the line better grades and a much better run blocking grade too. And, you know, I mean, so, and then DJ was the one who said, culture. This is a culture shock. You know, so did it work on DJ? Did this culture shock work on DJ, the appointed captain? I mean, he still was undisciplined. He had 9 penalties. You know, it's frustrating. You know, it's really frustrating. I mean, his 62.5 grade was the worst of his career. You know, I mean, so it's one thing if it's a culture shock, but that means it ought to work. Like, this is a good thing. I mean, the year before he got hurt, he had 72.3 and only 5 penalties. And everyone thinks Cliff sucks. And he had a pass blocking grade of 80.5. And he had his best year back in 2020. But he only had 695 snaps in that. So he's had, you know, well, actually, he played almost the whole year on that one. He had 88.3, you know, and then he qualified for a Pro Bowl alternate, which he got in 2021. Awesome. But then injuries took him down and inconsistencies. I mean, in 2021, he had 12 penalties. In 2019, he had 13. Last year in, you know, actually, I think it's like missed 2.5 games because of getting thrown out of the Seahawks game, which again, I mean, culture shock. What's Gannon's sticking point? No fighting, right? DJ gets tossed out of the Seahawks game, you know, throwing a punch or, you know, slapping at some guy. You know, people say, well, he was defending Kyler or whatever. Well, I don't think Kyler was playing then. He was defending a teammate. That's the whole point. And Jonathan Gannon would say this himself. You have to keep your heads. You can't hurt the team by getting suspended and giving the, you know, 15 yards, et cetera, you know, flagrant personal foul. So that's my issue with, you know, the culture, the sort of mystique around this culture is it's interesting how it really didn't work that great for some of the players you would think. I mean, the other thing for me was the Gannon hires. The only one who played well was Shashere, and he hardly played. He came on at the end a little bit. He was the only one who was graded well. He's the only one who had a grade over 60. Pascal was 0 on offense, just like his number. You know, and he wasn't that great on special teams either. I mean, White was really inconsistent. I mean, he was great one game, like the Dallas game, and the next game he's in the 20s against the 49ers. I mean, that was really perplexing. You know, he finished 58.9 with a run defense of 60.3. That's not good enough. At Mike, you've got to be better than that. And coverage of 59.8. He was much better in Philly in coverage. That was kind of, but he was playing the weak inside linebacker, which is a more cover position. And I think that's where he's strongest. If he's still playing Mike this year, and obviously now Austin Ford has made it clear that Zaven Collins is staying on the end. Oh my goodness. I just, again, can't see him holding out, you know, holding up physically as a NFL Mike. So, yeah. We'll see about that. So getting back to this, I had to look PFF for a second. Yeah.
We're talking about Buda Baker next. Jonathan Gannon had some thoughts about Buda Baker.
It was Jonathan Gannon?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and read that.
Okay, Gannon on Buda Baker's future. Quote, Monty will handle that, but obviously I know the value that Buda Baker brings to this organization and the team. I want to see three out there. Gannon to Coder. Well, if we were in a position to be picky, I'd prefer a star at a premium position like a cornerback instead of a standout safety. But our defense sucks and we need good players. And Buda is a good player.
He sure is. The problem, you know, I had with, you know, this was, you know, saying, but obviously I know the value that Buda Baker brings. I have an issue with that. Jonathan Gannon didn't come into that building touting Buda Baker as it should have been Buda's team. Instead, it was DJ Humphreys, it was Kyler Murray. You know, Gannon made more of a hoopla about Kaiser White than he did about Buda Baker. And that bothered me from the get-go. I mean, the whole letting the Buda Baker situation fester and make it sound like it was Buda Baker's fault, when the nature of those contracts, everybody knows when the guaranteed money comes out, and you're talking about a guy who's a perennial Pro Bowler, who's made more Pro Bowls than anybody, than people on the team combined, and is your best player, and is your alpha leader. To have him twisting out on the wind was an egregious mistake, in my opinion, and it sent a poor message. And that's why I'm nervous. I think it's just as likely they'll trade him. But obviously, I know the value. The other thing was not obvious. What was obvious to me was he didn't use Buda in nearly the creative kind of ways that Vance did, and put him in the creative kind of ways. And here's the other thing that bothers me. I mean, people say, oh, this effort was just so amazing. You know, you look at the guys on defense, and it was the worst defense I've seen as a Cardinals fan, from a strategic standpoint, from a personnel standpoint of putting guys in the wrong spots, not only at the wrong positions, but in positions to be successful. It was so unimaginative and so vanilla. It was run by a head coach who wanted to shun all responsibility of play calling, even called 30-year-old Nick Rouse a better play caller than he was. You know, run by an inexperienced coordinator with no mentors in the building, which is bizarre to me. I've still been asking about this year, why don't you add a defensive mentor? There are guys out there, other teams are doing it. Antonio Pierce got Marvin Lewis, for crying out loud, and Pierce had a great year defensively in Vegas. It's just, you know, I mean, Mike McDonald, who had the number one defense in the NFL and the Ravens, is now in Seattle, and he brings in Leslie Frazier. You know, I mean, what is it with Gannon that he thinks, oh, we're good with this setup, and he doesn't even want to run the plays? Because nothing in what we saw last year indicates they're competent in what they're doing. The game planning was awful. I mean, I seem to know a hell of a lot more about defending a Sean McVay offense than these guys did. I mean, they didn't show squat, and they got their asses kicked in two games on every bread and butter play, to the point where Sean McVay was laughing on a Monday morning NFL show about how easy the bread and butter plays were against the Cardinals. That disgusted me. And, you know, the reason why I hire a defensive-minded head coach was, thank goodness, finally we'll get after it. Maybe we won't always have an offense that's better than our defense, finally. And yet, the offense made some improvements while the defense got worse. And then everyone wants to blame it on personnel. Well, when you use the personnel wrong and you cut good athletes, really good athletes and high draft picks, you're bringing it on yourself. It's, you know, you can't then say, oh, well, we sucked because we didn't have the players. That's wrong. I mean, yes, we wouldn't have an all-star lineup like the 49ers. But the NFL is about getting more with less. And here's my thing about the defense. My question is, if they were playing hard, was it for the team, the coaches, or was it out of fear of getting cut? I mean, Gannon talks this way all the time. Like he said at the podium yesterday, like, oh, I want to play rookies early to know whether they belong here or we ought to just, you know, realize they're not good. I mean, that soon. Oh, we're going to realize after a couple games, like he did with Cadrell Clark, putting him on Cooper Kupp. So we have to go 4 weeks without seeing Cadrell Clark again. And then Cadrell Clark comes back and makes like 12 tackles and is all over the field playing. And then the next week he's not playing again. You know, especially when you had a guy like Marco Wilson who was struggling for 11 games and you don't do anything. And you got an inside linebacker like Josh Woods, who's never played the position well. The times that he played in Detroit, hit low, you know, very low PFF grades. And you keep him in there for 12 games while benching Owen Popo, who you drafted in the fifth round. And then Popo comes in and is a just remarkable upgrade on what we've been having. Why didn't we see that for 12 weeks? It's questions like that. Then here's my biggest problem with it, is that the passion on defense. I saw on numerous occasions the best tackler on our team, Buda Baker, storm the alley and ba-boom, make a great tackle. And not one teammate comes near him. Not one teammate comes near him. That says to me, these guys are playing for jobs and they're not too excited about what's going on with the coaching. That's what it said to me. And that's why the whole pass rush shut down. I mean, these guys didn't look like they were playing for one another. They looked like they were playing as individuals. And that's where I think people have to be careful about, oh, these guys played so hard. Well, that's going to happen when the new coach comes in and says, you know, I want killers. And if you're not a killer, we're going to cut you. So, you know, is it a rule by enthusiasm or a rule by fear? And I think, you know, people say, oh, the coaches seem to like Gannon. Well, that's the other thing about coaches who fear. You fear not being the one who says, you know what, I don't. You fear that, you know you're long gone. This is their livelihoods. This is their jobs. They don't want to be stigmatized the way that other players like Isaiah Simmons was. You know? And as, you know, this just bad egg, cancer of the locker room, so bullshit. So that's something that, you know, with Buda, it's going to, I can't imagine. I hope it happens. But I can't imagine, you know, Gannon putting the team where it belongs and remaking this Buddha's team, because this is should be Buddha's team. And he's earned that. He has that right. We'll see how they handle it. The next one, Ossifort on prospects choosing to skip drills at the combine. For me, more information is better. I respect anybody's decision to choose what they want to do. Ossifort Decoder.
I still love you, Marvin.
And he said, we've done a lot of work on Marvin Harrison Jr. Who wouldn't? And I'm going to get to that after these. We'll finish up with that because I've got some ideas about the top of this draft now that people are not going to like, but I there's a lot of things. I'm learning some things from some people.
People aren't going to like it. Uh-oh, here's Walter ready to draft Chop Robinson with the fourth pick in the draft.
Actually, I like Chop, not at four, maybe at 27. But I mean, Lateo Latu, that's a different story. I could see picking him if you trade down. But anyway, who was it? One of the great young pass rushers was saying how, Jerzon Newton was saying how he loves the Cardinals and had a great meeting with them. And the Cardinals showed him good plays and bad plays and really took him to task. And he said he loved it, loved the vibe in the rooms, really excited about that. I mean, Jerzon Newton is one of the, maybe the best pass rushing defensive tackle in this draft. I think he and Byron Murphy, the second, are two guys that stand out at that. So Austin Ford on second-year quarterback Clayton Tune competing to be the backup quarterback. Clayton made a lot of strides last year. It's hard to come in as a rookie and play. Ultimately, it's going to be who can do the job at the highest capability. Whether that's a young player or an old player, we're going to make that best decision. Austin Ford, Decoder.
You guys remember the Browns game, right? Right? Yes, we need a veteran backup, and hopefully one is willing to come this offseason after we got spurned by Jacoby Brissett last year.
Well, I'm not sure I think that one's, as I said before, is fair.
I mean, you disagree with the assessment.
I really do. I mean, if you're going to judge a guy on throwing him in after all the drama about Dobbs that week, you know, it should have been Dobbs, first of all. I mean, Dobbs had just come off the one good fourth quarter of his stay, rallying the team back against the Ravens for like 17 fourth quarter points. And now he's being told you're not playing next week. But he was also told we're not trading you. I mean, and then Gannon had thrown up like a toss of a coin. It might be Kyler, it might be Tune. Were they going to throw Kyler to the Browns? And Kyler said he was ready to go weeks earlier. He said that. He was thrown out there as a sacrificial lamb. I mean, he had no chance in that game. Plus, we were beat up on the line. All the scenarios there, playing in Cleveland against that defense, which at the time was number one in the league, and Myles Garrett and all the, I mean, it just, to expect Clayton Tune after sitting for eight games, when he should have been the starter from the beginning so that we're gaining equity, you know, I mean, you're going to, you know, gain equity at the position instead of run this charade that they did with Dobbs. And all the draft, giving up draft picks. Ugh. And all it got you was one win. And then people would say, yeah, perfect. This is just what they were planning. But when we look back, if the Cardinals coaches couldn't decide on one of four quarterbacks that they had all camp, which I think does not speak well to them. The last minute, they got to rush in Dobbs and give up a fifth-round pick. Those first three games, the Cardinals could have been 3-0. And then you bring back Kyler, who said he was ready after 4 weeks. And now maybe you're the Texans. Serious. If you got momentum going, because that Washington game was imminently winnable if Dobbs doesn't fumble those two plays in the second half. Cardinals had a lead earlier. You know, Giants game was 20-0 at halftime. And the defense, that was the worst half of defensive football I've ever seen. I mean, I don't know if the Giants scored that many points in their next three games combined. It was disgusting. You know, so then that was a squander up. Now the third week they beat Dallas at home. And man, this team could turn it on when they wanted to, couldn't they? Interesting. You know, when certain games piqued their interest. You know, they beat three playoff teams and came to play those days. So that might tell you something, too. So, but yeah, I mean, I think Clayton deserves a chance to compete for this QB2. And I, you know, I'm hopeful he does a good job. I thought he played very respectably in preseason. I thought he bounced back from some adversity. We got sacked in that Vikings game and then threw that strike down to one to Wilson, one to Dortch. I thought he competed very well. And plus, I like all the experience he's had throwing the football. I think he's got some ability there. And he also thought he could prove himself as being one of the better quarterbacks in that class. And I like that about him too. And it wouldn't surprise me if he lets this affect his confidence. I think he'll come back strong. So I hope he does. And I also hope, I prefer that they draft another quarterback so we can get younger. And in fact, today I was looking at tapes of Rocky Lombardi from Northern Illinois and responding to a tweet I got from a guy who wrote an article about him. And he's a kid I really like a lot. Tough kid who got some abilities. You know, it's like a day three pick somewhere along the line. There are other quarterbacks I like a lot in this draft too. I mean, Spencer Rattler, the way he comported himself at Senior Bowl was outstanding. So, I mean, there are guys out there who are sort of under the radar, although Rattler's getting some more props these days. And I think we'll probably go higher than people originally thought. So, as will J.J. McCarthy, in my opinion, although there's a mixed bag on him. But there's a mixed bag on all these quarterbacks, which we're going to get to in a sec. We're almost finished here. Gannon on Marvin Harrison Jr., playmaker. Anytime he touches it, he can score points. Gannon, decoder?
Playmaker. Anytime he touches it, he can score points.
Good one, KO. And then Ossifort on Trey McBride. Trey was a fun player to watch last year, and the way he continued to progress as the season went. Excited that we have him, and excited that we've got him moving forward. Ossifort, decoder?
At least Steve Keim left me one good player on a rookie deal.
Oh, that sticks in my craw. I mean, the galling thing for me about Isaiah Simmons, too, was I went back and watched that Eagles game that the Cardinals lost because, you know, largely due to the mishap at the end when Kyler slid a yard too short of the first down when he could have easily gotten the first down when they're down by three in the fourth quarter and moving the ball on a, 2-minute drill. Oh, what a frustrating game. But that game, Isaiah Simmons had the most tackles of anybody in the game. He had 13. He was the best defensive player on the field for the Cardinals, hands down. And why Jonathan Gannon doesn't make a mental note of that while playing that game is just beyond me. And why Gannon doesn't have didn't come in touting Simmons from the beginning, like he did other players. Why Gannon, instead of having a plan for Isaiah himself, why does he call in Isaiah and said, where do you want to play? All that still sticks in my craw. Isaiah Simmons is an outstanding athlete and a really good football player when focused and confident. And he got screwed around in Arizona from the beginning. The COVID years really hurt him too. He's a kid that thrives on day-to-day practice on the field. Yeah, and Myjai Sanders, ridiculous. I mean, you don't get a sack in the last six games, and you cut a guy like Myjai Sanders, and now it looks like Cam Thomas is. Though both those picks I loved when Steve Keim made them. In fact, almost every pick Steve Keim made I loved when they made them. What I didn't love, and the thing not to love, was how they were coached and how they were received by their coaches. And how they, what did the coaches do to put them in and help them be confident? Kudos to Kyle Odegaard. He said, maybe I'll make a habit of this. I hope you do, Kyle. This was so much fun. And boy, you don't pull any punches. I mean, oh boy. And I got to give Kyle also a shout out, because over the past week, when it was, National Media Week for the key guys in Arizona, and Michael Bidwell did his annual one interview, Odegaard spoke up and said, man, you guys didn't throw him one question about all the, the things he's charges he's facing. And I wrote back on Twitter, well, I can just imagine it was a quid pro quo, as it always is with Michael Bidwell, unfortunately. Was I bet he said, I'll do the interview, but you're not going to ask any questions along those lines. So it's my guess. Or out of intimidation, no one dared. that is that. But getting to the top of the draft, okay, here's the curious thing. Kyle, you heard that Marvin Harrison Jr. not only is not at the combine, he's not intending to have a pro day.
Yes.
What do you make of that?
I go either direction on that, because normally there are only a handful of prospects that have the ability to do that. I remember the famous example of Deion Sanders sitting down with, I think it was the New York Giants, and they asked him to take a test. And I remember he said, what pick are you guys at? And I think they said 9 or 10. And he said, I'll be gone by the time I'm at you guys. And he walked out instead of taking the test. So, like, only a handful of players have that level of, I know I'm a top five pick, right, and I can give as little information as I need to go to the places I need to go. So I think Marvin is in that unique of a position where he knows he's falling no further than 4 in the draft. So yeah. I look at it as like, use your leverage as is best fitting to you. And if he feels like this is unnecessary, he knows the teams who are going to be picking him and wants to maybe control the factors in an incredibly uncontrollable situation, which is you have no idea where you're going to go. And then 24 hours after the draft, you're sitting at a press conference being introduced to this new place that you have no idea where you're going to get drafted. I understand wanting to have control of a very uncontrollable situation, but it's something that only people who know they are at the top of the draft have the ability to control.
Right. Yeah, I have some very, of course, strong emotions about this, because you would expect it, right? Because first of all,
yeah, I would expect you, who's big on OTAs and things like that, to have strong opinions on this when he's under no obligation to necessarily do so. But proceed.
I mean, he had a platform at the combine to go in there and be the coup de grace, the just take over the whole thing with the way he runs, the way he catches the ball. I mean, make himself so irresistible that, he's now in play for the number one pick, which he is. And that's what makes me wonder if he already knows he's got one or two. Like they do in the NBA. You know this very well. Like they do in the NBA. Suddenly guys are stopping to go for tryouts because they've been assured. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Bears have told him, look, we're picking you at 1 or 2. We're not going to trade down below 2, but we're picking you. Or if, they said, we're going to stay and take you, but one way or the other, we're taking you. Now, what's happening is, right now, is that the odds of Justin Fields being traded have now been wiped off in Vegas. So something's brewing there. So if he does get traded, we know there's trade interest with the Falcons. We know there's trade interest with the Steelers. We know that offers have been made. I know the Steelers offered a second-round pick. The Bears were hoping for their first round pick. yeah, I mean, it's if he had those insurances. Now, someone could say, well, regardless, he knows he's going in the top four picks. And I think that's probably pretty safe. And like you said, then does it, you know, does it make a difference? Don't you want some control over who's going to be the one? And I'm guessing that he's assessed the Bears situation. He's assessed the Commanders. He's assessed the Patriots, and he's assessed the Cardinals. And he figured, you know, apples and oranges, you know, so why don't I just continue to train, et cetera. By the way, as we're speaking, wow. The NFL report card is out.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that at the end of the show. Do we want to jump into it now?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, Arizona Cardinal fans, I have good news. Because last year, the Cardinals were 31st out of 32 teams on the NFLPA report card. And this year, the Cardinals have improved to 27 out of 32 teams. In the NFL. I want to read the overview real quick here. Despite the fact that the Arizona Cardinals ranked near the bottom of the report cards last year, it is important to note the club made it, or sorry, this year, it is important to note that the club made improvements from last season, which increased their grades across multiple categories. Notable upgrades from last season include providing a daycare and a small family room, and they stopped the practice of charging players for dinner. The club also upgraded their weight room with new equipment and replaced the hazardous floor from last season. The underlying issue here is the facility. Ratings of the size of the locker room, training room, and weight room rank among the lowest in the league, with players comparing it more to an office building than a premier athletic training facility. The responding player's belief in club owner Michael Bidwill's willingness to invest in facilities remains low in comparison to the rest of the league, but is significantly higher than last year, given some of the upgrades. Additional upgrades and changes, such as variety in the cafeteria and renovating, expanding the locker room, as noted in the sections below, would instill more confidence going into next year.
Well done, lad. I'll read the category, you read the grade. Treatment of families.
That would be a D+, which is still 19th in the league because a lot of people got Fs in this category.
Food cafeteria.
D-28.
Nutrition dietitian.
C-28.
Locker room.
F 31st, which means one team got an F minus.
Was it the Patriots?
I think so. Yeah. I think it was actually. Yeah. Let me right. See. Yeah.
Yeah. Training room.
C minus 25th.
Training staff.
B 20th.
They did make upgrades there. And plus, Buddy Morris is an icon. Weight room.
C minus 27th, which I believe last year was an F.
Correct. Strength coaches.
C plus 26th.
Yeah, that was an improvement. Team travel.
C plus 14th.
Which is interesting because they have their own jet now. Why that wasn't higher. Head coach.
A minus 15th, which I know it says 15th, but a lot of head coaches got A pluses and A's right. In the category.
Right. Ownership.
F 30th, which is actually tied for 30th because there's only one owner who got an F minus.
Oh, there's an F.
Yes.
Who is that?
You're never going to believe it. It would be Clark Hunt of your 2-time defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs.
You're kidding.
People don't like Clark Hunt. This has been known for a while. Dude is not popular. You know who else got an F along with the Cardinals? That would be Mr. Art Rooney II with the Steelers. And the Steelers are one of the five teams that finished lower than the Arizona Cardinals.
Interesting. I'm surprised at the head coach, but then I'm not, because again, what I mentioned earlier, although, you know, wow, that's surprising to me.
Yeah, so the teams who've, weirdly enough, despite the fact that the Cardinals did move up, they still finished worse than the team that was reusing jock straps in the 2000s, aka the Cincinnati right. Bengals. They finished 26th. But 28th was Pittsburgh. 29th was New England. 30th was the Chargers. 31st was Kansas City. And then 32nd is still Washington.
Yeah. It's just perplexing to me how a head coach who's a defensive-minded head coach has the worst defense in DVOA in the league, and he gets an A-. It's shocking to me.
Well, let me see if I can find the description of Gannon, because they have little descriptions lower down here. Yeah, head coach, A-. 90% of the players feel head coach Jonathan Gannon is efficient with their time. The players feel that Jonathan Gannon is very willing to listen to the locker room. Finished 12th overall in that grade. And that's all they have for head coach.
Okay. Yeah, I think he does listen. I think that's one of his good traits. Yeah.
Wow.
This is just a shot. I'm gonna have to really think about this, because I just can't imagine. Some of it just doesn't feel right to me. But you know, I know I'm fighting an uphill battle, because a lot of fans are just gaga about Gannon.
Well,
largely because of his belief in Kyler Murray. I mean, if he's going to endear himself to fans, that would have been the way to do it, and I think he knew that. And so far, that gamble has, you know, paid off, even though I think people have gone to the extremes of thinking how great it was. There, you know, it was good. It wasn't great. And like Bickley said on his blast yesterday, you know, pretty good in the NFL is not good enough. I mean, if you're trying to compete to win Super Bowls. And so regardless, I think, a lot's at stake this year, particularly in now that we're going to, I guess, try to win games consistently and from the get-go, which was a premise of this year that was just really hard for me personally, as someone who thinks of football integrity as an important thing. And doing what's best for the players is an important thing. So, and players do not play to lose, and never should, and never would, unless they're prompted or bribed. There are minor improvements there. What are we, 27th now in the whole league?
Yeah, 27th out of 32.
Okay, well, that's some progress in 1 year. And,
Yeah, they said there were small improvements, and so the willingness to improve has also increased, because last year people were like, nope, Bidwell's not going to have much of an improvement, which, as we mentioned before, Bidwell's one of three owners that had an F or worse grade as well, so it's not like he's the cream of the crop necessarily. I'm looking through the head coaching one, because you mentioned it a second ago. A lot of the ones who finished worse than Gannon are coaches who got fired, like Ron Rivera, Josh McDaniels. A couple of interesting ones, though, finishing worse than Gannon at a B+. And it seems like the thing that they really emphasized was efficiency with time and willingness to listen seems to be the two points that they emphasized. John Harbaugh was a B+, so finished lower than Gannon in both those respects. Kevin Stefanski was a B-. Matt LaFleur was a B+. But a lot of people are in that A+, A minus category. I think like 75% of the league is in the category that,
yeah. You know, now that you mentioned the context, Kyle, now I get it. Because if you're going to pick two categories that Gannon's good at, those are the two. And I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, and almost to a fault, though, with the efficiency of time. Because, and here's where the dichotomy is. And this is why I'm struggling and grappling with this. You can be efficient with time. Like skip the third day of mandatory minicamp. Like don't even have a whole rookie week, which the league gives you. You can be that. And then woefully unprepared for games. You think that, well, maybe we shouldn't be this efficient with time if it's going to cost the product on the field. And I felt the whole season long that decisions were made in haste and the preparations were profoundly lacking. So, you know, I mean, and players, let's just face it, you just came out of college last year. If they pulled your college students and about teachers who are efficient of time, wouldn't the ones who typically end class 10 minutes early get A's?
That's not necessarily efficient. That's, you know, getting through with, I wouldn't necessarily qualify that as efficient with your time, because then you're wasting time at the end.
No, I mean, he's letting you go.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So if the days are, you know, we get in, do our job and go out. Yeah. Sign me up for that.
Yeah. I think you're going to get A pluses on your employee report card.
Right.
On your NFLPA report card, right. You're probably going to get a higher grade.
Right. I mean, it's interesting you said Stefanski and Harbaugh. Those are guys who like longer practices. Both of them. Players don't like that. So, you know, but both made the playoffs for a reason. Both were better prepared for games way more than the Cardinals were.
You know,
they had more to work with talent wise, but still, I mean, look at the Texans. I mean, what was D'Amico Ryan's grade?
Let's see. Texans A-, same as Gannon. Let me see what they said about D'Amico in the head coach. 89% of players feel D'Amico Ryans is efficient with their time. Gannon was 90%, so they're basically the same. The players feel that D'Amico is somewhat willing to listen to the locker room. So D'Amico finished about the same.
Well,
the ones that are bad are the ones that mostly got fired. Like, I'm looking at the list. The people who got C's and D's and even B's are mostly people who are no longer in the jobs that they were in when the report cards came through.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see who the A pluses were as well. Obviously Andy Reid, which is incredible that Andy Reid is the A plus, and yet they still finished 31st out of 32 in the rankings this year. Because they mentioned it with the Raiders, because McDaniels had the worst grades of any coach by far. And they said, if you just took out the coach, the Raiders would have finished fifth, and instead they finished ninth in the rankings. If you removed the coach, they improved from ninth to fifth, which they technically have.
Gorgeous facilities. I mean, they are rolling.
Yeah, so the A pluses were Andy Reid, Man Campbell in Detroit, oh, interesting. Kevin Stefanski. I'm sorry, not Kevin Stefanski. Kevin O'Connell with the Minnesota Vikings is an A+.
He's well liked. Yeah.
Yeah. And those are the only A pluses. There's a bunch of A's in there, but those are the only A pluses. And the Vikings finished one of two teams that had an A+ in the ownership grade too. The Wolf family is very popular up there.
When are these ballots cast by the players?
I presume during training camp, just because they have to get 1,700 people's analysis, but it doesn't I don't see anything that says exactly when they reviewed it.
That would make sense to me too, context wise, about the coaching grade. Because yeah. I still can't imagine at the end of the year. But if it's just on those two categories.
It seems to be that's what they emphasized most. If they saw something that was, you know, otherwise in there, they kind of noted it. Like for
it's for how much time does a coach try to take away from you of your own time?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. So, in other words, you know, is he just keeping things on time so you're not overburdened time wise? And that does not surprise me that Gannon, you know, he canceled third day of mandatory mini camp as a rookie head coach, which to this day just, and people say it's no big deal. It just, it's a huge deal for a new staff, putting in new systems. And, you know, it's just awful. I mean, I'm sorry, but all right.
Yeah, I don't think, because even some of the, like I said, some of the names on there is more, they run long practices, they're less willing to listen to the locker room, which it's not surprising that John Harbaugh is a bit hard headed. It's just that they normally make the right decisions a lot of the time. But
yeah, and I think that if this was at the end of the year, the Chiefs wouldn't be 32nd either. And I think that if this is the end of the year, Gannon's grade would have been skewed. Knowing if this was taken towards the beginning of the year when, you know, when games weren't being played yet, real games, then, you know, I think how the real game goes and then what you see during the week. You know, and how well the team is preparing you to play in these games, how well the coaches would have a factor. But
the Kansas City one, I think, might be still true because it seems like the number one complaint is the facilities, and their only improvement was that the players got chairs at their lockers this season.
Good one. Yeah. Well, that's not hurting their product on the field, so.
Yeah.
Gotta give them credit. And they have the A-plus coach, so, you know.
They have the number one graded coach. Even of the A-pluses, Andy Reid finished number one out of every coach in the league.
There you go, man. There you go. What a legend. All right, guys. So, there'll be more chatter from the Combine this week. I'm interested to see who the Combine stars are of the week. There's always some surprises. And, you know, it's interesting to me that the quarterbacks at the top are bugging out of throwing at the combine. You know, I love the way DJ Stroud came in and gripped it and ripped it last year. You know, look at, he was the one who really stood out. I'm not a big fan of skipping stuff, you know, and I think it's a pain in the ass for people to, you know, they'd like to see them throw there. They don't have to go to a pro day to see it. So it asks people to, like, make extra special trips. And I mean, you can do that virtually these days anyway, but it's not the same as being there. And but I think what's interesting to me is at the top of this draft, the scrutiny that's coming out about all three quarterbacks, as it typically does at this time of year, but this feels different to me. I mean, with the Williams scenario and his quote, was it today or yesterday, was, well, if the Bears pick me, I'll be excited. But if they trade me, I'll be excited. I mean, what? You know, I mean, maybe you shouldn't talk. I mean, that's just bizarre. I mean, if I were one of those top three teams, I wouldn't go anywhere near Caleb Williams. And I hope Cliff doesn't take on a diva quarterback again for his sake. He'll do much better with someone else. you know, what's interesting too is I'm now reading scouts' first round mock. Dennis Kelly, or it's Kelly's last name. He's a former scout for the Jets under Parcells. He's really good. He's controversial because he had a third round grade on Caleb Williams, and now he's got Williams off his board for skipping everything, saying that Williams just thinks he's bigger than the whole thing, which I agree to an extent. That when you put it out there, like, I'm just going to do the minimum. I didn't like that Kyler did that either. You know, I wanted to see Kyler run. I want to see him do all those things. Plus, there's a camaraderie you build with your fellow, you know, classmates at the combine and stuff. It doesn't hurt you to throw the ball. Yes, it's to receivers you don't know, but it doesn't matter. They just want to see the ball coming out of your hand. You know, unfortunately, I think we live in an age where showing up isn't as important to some people. And I think it's a mistake to do that. And while you don't show up, others will and typically do better. Like there were other teams who, even veteran teams, who took the whole 3 days of mandatory minicamp. I didn't cancel one of them. Those guys show up. They did better than the Cardinals. It's just part and parcel of what you put in, you're going to get out. And there's just a if you're a quarterback, who wouldn't welcome the chance to throw the football? It just makes it sound like, you know, it's got to be all under your comfort level or whatever. And that's why it still makes me bristle to this day when Monty said yesterday, well, we're going to do everything we can to make Kyler comfortable. I mean, the last coaching staff did that. How'd that work out at the end? You know, there's only so much of making people comfortable that, you know, and kind of the way decisions were made around Kyler. You know, Chop Robinson today said the hardest tackle he ever went up against was, Damon Jones. You know, I mean, we drafted Paris Johnson Jr., who's the best left tackle in the draft, and played him at right tackle because Kyler wanted DJ at left tackle. And he was recruiting Paris Johnson to play right tackle. I mean, and, you know, Damon Jones had a way better year than Paris Johnson. Of course, he was right tackle coming in and didn't have to change positions. I mean, and then the way the Houston trade backfired. I mean, karma goes around. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, this is all about comfort. This just in. So little of the NFL is about comfort. You know, it's not about comfort. And, you know, it's about, here's what you do. You do drills, floating drills in that pocket for Kyler so he can finally start doing that, which he hasn't done in his whole career. You got to float and not bail. You got to float. And sometimes you got to hang in there and take a hit to get it done. Those are the sacrifices that quarterbacks make to win in this league. You know, that won't be comfortable, him, you know, doing those drills. I mean, I used to do them with guys, defenders carrying brooms. And you had to float to where you had to pass between the brooms to create an open passing lane. You know, those drills aren't easy and they're not comfortable, but they build confidence. And, you know, but now with Drake May, boy, books are, you know, there's just, you know, Drake May, I think, you know, one guy put it 2 years ago, he reminded me a little bit of Tom Brady. Now, last year, it just totally turned me off. And I have to be honest, when I was watching Drake May this year, I was really surprised not only at how erratic he was. Now, he did lose some weapons from the year before and stuff, but he still had, you know, Devontae Walker, and he still had some talent to work with. But he was much more off the mark this year than last. But the way he was brooding around the field and off the field was, I was like, you know, he's not making it better for himself. It was Kyler-esque. He just looked like he was pissed all the time. And I picked up on that pretty readily in games. I was like, what is he thinking? And I didn't think he did much for his teammates to behave like that. So if I were in the top three, I wouldn't pick May. I wouldn't pick Williams. And Daniels had such a great year at LSU, but you worry about how thin he is as a running quarterback. And the thing with Daniels is, and he got away with it a lot at LSU last year, is he holds onto the ball way too long. In the NFL, it's got to come out quicker. And with decisions have to be made quicker. And I think he's got a pretty major transition ahead of him from going from college to the NFL. But I think he's got the arm and the legs to put a package together that could be pretty attractive. But I don't think it's going to work for him overnight. I think it's going to take him some time for whoever drafts him. But as a result of that, I'm starting to wonder, you know, and I ask myself this, are any of those guys really belong in the top three, you know, in the top five players in this draft, best football players? And that question to me is absolutely not. The three receivers are better than all three as football players, all three of them. They're much more consistent, and you know, none of them are head cases. All of them are coming off really good years and put their best feet forward. All of them show leadership and innate skills. That's one of the more impressive wide receiver trios we've seen in quite some time at the top of the draft. So I mean, I wouldn't put any of those quarterbacks in their class. And then, you know, there are a bunch of others that I think, you know, if you look at who's a better football player, you know, the tackles, for example, are pretty dang good at the top. I love Byron Murphy. He's going to be a star for somebody. Murphy the second. Leitu, the edge rusher, now that he's healthy, oh my goodness. He could be an all-star out of this draft. Jared Verse could be a total stud all-star. I mean, there are guys in this draft that are so talented. I mean, Brock Bowers, I think, is the best dog in this class. I mean, he attacks everything. He is one tough nut of a football player. If you're talking about toughness, I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, to virtually anyone in this draft, he's in a class on his own, I think. He is that special, a dog who gives everything he has on every play. And there are several really good ones in this draft. But because teams need quarterbacks and all the juggling and everything, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But because of that, I mean, I haven't allowed myself the luxury of thinking that Marvin Harrison Jr. is somehow miraculously going to make it to four. And now that he's not participating at all in anything and just doing his own thing, it makes me wonder if he's got assurances somewhere. It's early in the program, but I think it's possible that someone's tipped him off and said, look, we'll save you all the trouble of having to go to medicals and, you know, this and that. Be interested too if he takes any trips. It sounds to me like he's just good to go now and that he's just going to train at Ohio State until the draft and then find out where he's going and So, but but it's going to be fascinating. And, you know, it's that time of year where the combine is in full flow right now. And, you know, everyone's excited. And to think of the new prospects you can add to your team and the discussions that we've had in the mock drafts, it's all fun. By April, we'll be tired with it and can't wait. Kind of tired of it now already, like you guys probably are. So, but anyway, last thought from you, Kyle.
I am very excited to see what happens over the next 2 weeks, because I have a feeling we will know what the Bears' plan is, which will open up draft and mock draft boards a good bit more. And mm-hmm. I'm curious to see who the Cardinals invite in or who gets leaked out, because, you know, it's that whole lying season thing where you bring prospects in if they're willing to, if they're not willing to. Right. I'm just, the next 2 weeks are going to be interesting with some information, and especially because the Bears are going to have to make a decision sooner rather than later. I think the longer they hang on to Justin Fields, the more his value goes down, because other teams are going to find quarterbacks, and that's going to shrink the market a little bit. And I wouldn't go so far as to say Caleb Williams isn't going to be pick number one or number two anymore, but it does seem like these teams are getting into the quarterbacks, and you know, as time goes on, it doesn't seem like teams are all that enthused by the possibility of picking these quarterbacks as much as they were 3 months ago.
Right. That happens to a degree every year. But, I mean, is there a CJ Stroud in this group here?
I didn't think there was a CJ Stroud in the group last year. I have no idea who is a good quarterback and who is not. That's why I usually trust other people with the scouting grades, because I've joked now that you look at the 2021 draft class and it's Trevor Lawrence, who's all right, and a bunch of guys who haven't really turned in anything. And I look back and think, God, I wasted so much time pretending like I knew how to scout quarterbacks in that 2021 NFL draft. So I just trust other people's expertises now instead of doing my own scouting and drafting and things of those sorts. It's just something that doesn't interest me as much, and I trust the opinions of the consensus about who are the super talented players in a draft class. So I have no idea whether Caleb or Drake May or any of these people will turn into successful quarterbacks. I would hope that Cliff gets the quarterback he wants the most, regardless of whether that's Caleb Williams or Drake May. I suspect that it's Caleb, because Cliff has spent so much time around Caleb Williams the last couple years. So I hope that he gets the quarterback that puts him in the best position to succeed, because that will be better for everyone involved. If you have a quarterback who you are intimately familiar with, or you feel puts you in the best position to succeed, instead of forcing you into a situation that you have to make the best of, it's going to work better for the development of the player and for the, you know, just the overall enjoyment of having a player who is super talented succeed, unlike the Bears, who just kind of failed Justin Fields these last few years.
Yeah. A lot will depend on free agency, and that's going to be fascinating. Will any of those teams at the top, sign a free agent quarterback? That would be a game changer. I'll tell you what I would do if I were an NFL team. I'd try to offer, you know, a day two pick for Jake Browning of the Bengals, who played really well when Burrow was out. And, you know, he's already shown he can play at a pretty high level in the NFL. In just his first taste of action, that was, you know, that was impressive. Let me see what his PFF grade was.
Yeah, I think of him similar to how I think of Heinicke, where he kind of burst on the scene, had been turned away from a couple NFL jobs and now looks like a solid NFL backup. I would, if I were a team, I would maybe have Browning be a bridge quarterback of some sort or a high end backup. But he, well, that's not something that was even on the radar 16 months
ago. You know, he had a higher grade than Joe Burrow. Burrow played in 10 games, 77.9. Browning, 9 games, 79.3. Second highest grade only to Ja'Marr Chase on the entire Bengals offensive roster.
Browning was the man for a good portion there. I am amazed by how they were able to stick around during that during the second part of the season.
Right.
But yep. I also know that half of Burrow's games he was playing through the calf injury as well. And Burrow had 3 great weeks and everything else was just kind of icky along the way. He had 3 or 4 great weeks along last season, but I think they've got a good quarterback room there. If someone offers a day 3 pick for Jake Browning, I think they might consider it. Like if someone offers a 4th rounder for him, I think you'd consider it.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a guy who's bounced around a little bit. You know, his draft year was 2019, so he's a little older. But, man, I mean, and he did it against some good defense. He had a 68.6 grade against Baltimore, 71.5 against Kansas City, 80.8 against Minnesota, 83.3 against Indianapolis, 90.1 versus Jacksonville, 55.2 versus Cleveland, which, you know, but he only had 4 snaps in that game. So that's, he wasn't starting that game. That's when he came in.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how the dominoes fall in free agency, because there's basically 3 starting caliber quarterbacks, I think. It's Kirk Cousins, it's Russell Wilson, and it's Baker Mayfield. And it seems like there's 6, 7, 8 teams that are in the quarterback market. So we'll see what happens between all of those guys.
Yeah, I look around the league at guys like Browning who, you know, wow, if he can play at that level, why not see if the Bengals would be interested in taking a pick for him, like a second rounder. And then you can tap into one of – you can trade down. Now you're in a position to trade down and get a haul potentially. But I'm wondering now if teams would be all that anxious to trade up for quarterbacks. I was looking at today the Vikings hired Josh McCown as their quarterback coach. Curious that McCown was hired by the Panthers and pre-draft he wanted Stroud. And now the Vikings are hiring him. And we know the Vikings may be looking for a quarterback. And word is that Josh McCown is very close to Drake May. Things that make you go, because that could affect the Cardinals if their top receiver, Marvin Harrison Jr., if he's the one, is off the board and the Vikings make a like haul deal to come up from 11. I imagine they'll, you know, Monty will be listening, you know. You know, maybe there'll be an offer that's too good to be, you know, to turn down. In which case, I made the case on Revenge of the Birds this week in the articles there, if you want to check them out, about best prospects for the Cardinals, best system fits. We got a lot of play on that article. Took me 4 days to write. So you might want to check it out if you haven't already. One of the points I made is that if you do trade down, in, even as far as 13 or maybe even 14, there's still some great immediate starter players at those spots. There's pass rushers there. Talese Fuaga, I think, in my opinion, he gets me more excited than any tackle in this draft. And I love the other guys too. But Talese Fuaga is Tristan Wirfs with quicker feet. I mean, that kid bounces, and he's so strong. Love it. He had the highest right tackle grade in the country from PFF, 90.2. So, I mean, the play matches the talent, you know. So there are guys that you can, you know, still, I mean, Byron Murphy the second might be there. I mean, that's part of me that wants them to go tack defensive tackle, get dress the defense. I mean, again, you know, I mean, we're just doing more to appease Kyler. I mean, I get it. The top of these three receivers and Brock Bowers are special players. So no matter what the year is, if you're up that high and they're there and you're not drafting a quarterback, you have to look at them.
Real quickly before we go, I have a question for you. Does the idea, because you talked about drafting tackle and an offensive player in the draft there, does the possibility of L'Jarius Sneed being available for trade, like a sign and trade scenario, does that change your interest at all in the 27 pick, the 33 pick, or I'm sorry, the 35 right. pick, something along those lines? Or are we still steadfast with it's better to get rookies in the door than trade one of those draft picks for right. a more proven commodity?
Yeah, if you can just give up the 27 pick for a Sneed, or the guy that Kyler Bird from AZ Underground tweeted out today or asked today if there's a player you would give up the 27th pick for who's tagged, who would it be? I said Christian Wilkins from and you and I are both high on him, the defensive tackle from the Dolphins. So, but Sneed, too, I mean, I think, though, it's probably going to take more for Sneed than just one. With Wilkins, maybe not. 1-1 might get that done. But with Sneed, it might take more. Maybe if you add a player. But I don't know. But yes, Sneed, I'd love to have on our team. He would fit great. Although I'm still not sure what our defense is trying to do. I mean, what their identity is. So I just don't know what they want from the corners. They play a lot of soft zone, too much, in my opinion. And it's not coached well. So, I mean, you're looking for a zone corner. You're looking for a man corner. What are you looking for? A combo corner. And that's what L'Jarius Sneed can give you. He's a combo. He can do it all. So he can press. He can play off coverage. He can play zone. He checks all those boxes. I'd go crazy for that. Yes, I would. I mean, I don't know how much you can give beyond that. The 27th pick, maybe a day two pick the following year. You could maybe argue, but I don't know. What would you do?
Yeah, maybe the top of the second round pick and maybe one of those later picks or something along those lines. I love L'Jarius Sneed. It's just, I know the Cardinals are not necessarily just a L'Jarius Sneed away, but if they were going to use that pick on a slot corner anyways, then I think it's not the worst idea in the world. And they have cap space flexible. So I would offer, what is it, 30, 35, 36, whatever that first second round pick they have is, and then maybe toss in another draft pick in there. I just think from a more macro standpoint, it's so interesting how some organizations succeed and others, you know, have to come in and pay at the end for players that they can't develop themselves, because L'Jarius Sneed was a right. former sixth round pick by Kansas City. 4 years right. later, he's a Pro Bowl corner, instrumental in multiple championship teams, came right. in and replaced the secondary that was previously Tre'Varius Ward, Tyrann Mathieu, and Daniel Sorensen, completely moved all right. those pieces out. He's at the focal point of it. And at the end, they might be able to flip that sixth round pick for potentially a first round pick or a high second round pick. And that's how great organizations find value.
Yeah, they're going to get a first round pick for him. No doubt in my mind. Or they won't take it.
I understand it. And if they draft Enos Rakestraw or they draft Cooper DeJean or something like that, maybe they're able to develop them in the same way they've developed Snead, because obviously Snead was a sixth round pick who became a Pro Bowl corner.
I mean, look at the job that Steve Spagnuolo has done with that entire young secondary. It's unbelievable. I mean, he also has McDuffie all pro already in year two at slot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're confident in your coach, here, we're going to draft you another player. You got it right. And Rakestraw reminds me some of Snead. They're similar physically. That's a great point. Yeah. And, but he fits the bill. I mean, that's a guy you want to invest in. But then you ask yourself, like with a Rakestraw, can you get a guy similar to him and groom him yourself? And are we one player away this year from contending for Super Bowl? So you got to weigh all those factors. So I don't think, you know, Monty would want to give up the kind of capital it would take when there are guys you can look at in this draft. I love DeJean. Unbelievable. He would be fantastic. I love a lot of the Quinion Mitchell. You know, he might be there at 27. Love the kid, Terrion Arnold from Alabama.
I'm still going to pound my fists on the table for Kool-Aid. Yep. Please get us Kool-Aid. He is the AJ Terrell of this draft class.
Okay. And I'd be delighted to see Kool-Aid at 27. That would be tremendous. Fantastic. So, yes. Yeah, that would be keeping with your offseason plan for the Cardinals, which I'd give you total props for. Absolute total props. So, with that, thank you, Kyle, for the Combine edition. We can add to the title the NFL report card discussion we had, and because that came in as we were taping. And thanks to all of you. Hope you have a fun Combine week, and that you have dreams of future stars in Cardinal uniforms. When you look at the guys you like in this draft, and let's keep discussions going on Revenge of the Birds and at WBJ Mitch on Twitter. Until next time, may the red rain shower down on you into the red sea. Red rain.